Good morning, everyone. My name is Catherine Mowbray-Lawrence.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Hello and welcome, everyone. My name is Catherine Mowbray-Lawrence. I'm your host for The Powerful Communicator, and it is my pleasure to be with you today and to introduce my awesome leading lady guest, Rebecca Johansson. And good morning, Rebecca, and thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
We're going to talk this morning about emotional intelligence for women leaders specifically, and I'd just like to take a moment and read a little bit about Rebecca's awesome background. Dr. Rebecca Johansson is a powerful consultant and an in-demand trainer. She presently teaches speech and communication at Mercy College in New York, as well as theater at New York University's Tisch School of the Arts. Dr. Johansson holds a PhD in theater from the joint doctoral program at UC Irvine and the University of California at San Diego. She also holds a master's degree in theater from San Diego State University. And shortly after graduation from San Diego State, she founded the Stone Soup Theater Company, one of San Diego's most critical acclaimed theater companies. Dr. Johansson has focused on connecting acting skills with coaching public speaking for the last 7 years, working with a variety of clients to improve public speaking skills and emotional intelligence. She also actively works in the off-Broadway theater, producing and directing works at New York's infamous La Mama Experimental Theater Club. Rebecca's approach to teaching public speaking stems from her lifelong study of acting methods. She works with clients to discover strengths and areas for improvement, then introduces skills developed by actors to enhance the client's understanding of their own bodies, voices, and message. Rather than instructing participants in the right and wrong of public speaking, Dr. Johansson works with clients to discover their most natural, comfortable, and confident public selves. And isn't that what we're all working towards, Rebecca?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. And it's surprising how challenging that can be for people sometimes when we spend our days staring at our computers to remember that we have a body and that we have a personality that can come through.
And we need to be social in person sometimes or on the stage, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you're an expert in teaching teams emotional intelligence. And for those in our listening audience who aren't familiar what emotional intelligence is or means, could you please explain it?
Yes, absolutely. Well, back in, I think in the early 1980s, there was a Harvard professor of education named Howard Gardner who came up with this idea that we don't just have a singular intelligence, that there are multiple ways in which we are intelligent. Our IQ is just a small part of that intelligence. And our IQ, once we reach a certain age, there's not very much we can do to grow and expand that number of our IQ. But he theorized that our emotional intelligence makes up a large part of our experience and our ability to learn and to grow and to work through the world. And unlike IQ, our emotional intelligence can actually grow and improve and develop over time and through experience. So we define it in the work that I do as the ability to first recognize that you're having an emotion, that somebody else is having an emotion. And once you're capable of recognizing that that's happening, then what do you do with that information? So we talk about being able to recognize emotions in yourself and in others, and then being able to regulate those emotions or manage them in a way that will be leading to a positive outcome and to a positive experience for both you and the people that you're engaged with.
So it also will then, if you can recognize your emotions and learn to deal with them as well as other people's emotions, then it also would affect your behavior, correct? Hopefully.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Yes. We always start with the self, with just being able to recognize that you're having an emotional response and figuring out what your emotional triggers might be. And that for some people can be really challenging, just having an awareness that something has triggered an emotional response in them. In American workplaces in particular, we're told that we really shouldn't have emotions in the workplace, that we should leave them at the door, that they shouldn't be involved in business decisions. But the research has been really showing over the last 10, 15 years that emotional intelligence has been a solid focus at businesses, that's impossible. I mean, we're human beings. We're going to have emotional responses to things throughout the day. We go through many different emotional states in a single day. And to think that we aren't going to experience that in the workplace is just ridiculous. And so a lot of organizations now are embracing this idea and recognizing that it's going to lead to a more productive and a happier workplace the more people understand the way that their emotions interact on a day-to-day basis.
I can see where it would make a huge impact. And sometimes I would imagine that you find this often in your work, that teams or even individuals have not even stopped to analyze or recognize or have an awareness of their emotions and how it might impact their direct reports or their teams or even those whom they report to.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, the research has shown that the leader's emotional state is what's going to set the tone for everyone else on the team. So if a leader is agitated, then the entire team is going to pick up on that agitation and respond to it, even unconsciously. They may be conscious of it or they may not. But it's because everybody's eyes are going to that leader and that they're gauging how they have to react in order to impress upon the leader. So having awareness, if you have people that are reporting to you, of how your emotional states are having an impact on your team's ability to be motivated and to move forward and to accomplish tasks, is crucial to a leader's success.
So it's important for a leader to recognize his or her own emotions and not necessarily control them, but just be prepared to work with them, if you will, to have a positive outcome for the team, right, or for their direct reports. It reminds me of a situation that I had, Rebecca, when I was heading up a department, and one of my best girlfriend passed away from breast cancer, and I'm a pretty private person. I'm English, and we just tend to be stiff upper lip and be very private, and I didn't share that with anyone for 2 days at work. And then one of the administrators just looked at me and he said to me, "What the heck is the matter with you today? It's like you're completely shut down." And then I realized that I was shut down because I didn't want to fall to pieces. I didn't want to start weeping at work and with my team. But I did realize that my attempt at stoicness, whatever the correct form of that word is, of being stoic, wasn't serving my colleagues. So I did then send out an email and just explain to them that my dearest girlfriend had passed away on the weekend. This was on a Tuesday. And, if I seem to be less open than other times or more closed down, if they would just please forgive me, and I'm still available, my office door is still open, blah, blah, blah. And I got so much of an outpouring of compassion that I was so glad that I actually did take that step. But that wasn't an awareness that I had originally until that administrator kind of nudged me or got me going.
We have a saying that we're not as good at hiding our emotions, excuse me, as we think we are. And we talk about how emotions are contagious. so they can be passed from one person to the next very easily. They leak, so if we think that we're covering them up really well, we're not. People can sense unconscious cues that we're sending through our body language and through our vocal tone, and that we know that they drive our behaviors. So, you know, being able to recognize that you're having an emotional response to something is the first step. And we say, if you can name your emotion, then you can tame it. You can start to have control over it as soon as you recognize that you're having an emotional response to something. And then you can decide, is this emotion that I'm having useful to what I'm about to go in and accomplish, or do I need to shift into a different emotional state to handle the thing I am about to do? Or is it better to wait, to push this off until I can have a better grasp on my emotional mm-hmm. state? And that's the first step in emotional intelligence, is just having that awareness, just recognizing it.
Well, that's a really good point. And again, you know, what I didn't realize is how my being, you know, quiet and just kind of robotic, I think that's how I was perceived at that moment, also mm-hmm. caused alarm in my team members and in my direct reports. And that really, because I'm a compassionate person, that really, after the fact, really disturbed me, that I was just thinking about myself, of course, because it was my grief. And but it really brought my awareness to a different level. So I do appreciate what you're saying, because I could see it in myself at that moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And particularly as somebody who's in a leadership position, your team will pick up on those cues much more quickly than they will to somebody else within the organization that they don't have an immediate connection with in terms of their job performance.
And Rebecca, how crucial is effective communication in relation to a leader's performance and in relation to her rapport with her team and in getting things done?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely, absolutely crucial. I was participating in a training recently with a professor at Stanford Business named J.D. Schramm, and he put up a slide that said, communication equals leadership and leadership equals communication, that's such an integral part of your performance as a leader. There's an organization named Talent Smart that's been collecting data on emotional intelligence for about 20 years now. And some of their statistics show that EQ alone, we call emotional intelligence either EQ or EI, it's sort of interchangeable, that it explains about 58% of a leader's job performance, and that 90% of top performers have a really high emotional intelligence. So it's absolutely crucial to a leader's ability to connect. And I got started in this training when about 10 years ago I was doing a bit of a public speaking kind of a program. It was a program called Acting for Executives. And I had a man who attended my seminar speak with me after, who was in the biotech field. He was a research scientist, and he had just been promoted to be a team leader because he'd done very well at his job. And he said to me afterwards, he said, I need your help in helping me figure out how to motivate my team, because they just don't understand how important it is to my career that they do well. And I said, well, that's the first thing. They don't care about your career. They don't care about it at all. So that's actually what led to the development of the emotional intelligence program that I currently teach. I offer through UC San Diego. It was a program I did at UC San Diego where I spoke to this gentleman. And the light bulb just went off for him. Oh, my team don't care about me. They care about their own careers. So, yeah, just being able to effectively communicate with your direct reports, being able to understand what motivates them, being able to understand how their emotional states impact their productivity on the job, those are absolutely crucial to whether or not your team is going to be successful, and therefore whether or not you are going to be a successful leader. It's all about finding that balance between, yes, we have to get the job done. The job has to get done. But at the same time, we have to get along well with each other. We have to enjoy the process of getting the work done. And we have to have a positive group dynamic in order to be more productive and get the job done faster, better, with more efficiency. So there, it's completely integrated to job performance.
I think that that example that you gave of that newly minted executive, I'm sure his emotional intelligence really increased and improved after that, right? After that awareness.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I believe he was one of the first participants that we had in the emotional intelligence program when we started it a few months later.
So that's a good example of how it can actually expand and improve as you learn the training and you learn what motivates other people. So some people might be motivated by money. Some other people might be motivated by power and prestige. And some people might be motivated by recognition or even fame. You know, and not, that doesn't work for all of us. Like, I've never wanted to be famous. I do like to be recognized, but it's not essential for me to do my job well because my work ethic allows me to do my job well. But everybody has different reward mechanisms, and you have to, as a leader, play to, if you would, don't mind me using that word, play to and accommodate what other people's roles are, ambitions are, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the number one reason that people leave a job is because they have a poor relationship with their direct supervisor. So it's costly as well if you don't take the time to understand what motivates your team members and how to create a positive group dynamic.
Yes, I've read that statistic as well. I'm familiar with that, and it's very, very impactful. And how you can impact or not impact others, well, you can impact them to stay in their jobs, or you can motivate them to start looking around. And so I wanted to also bring up the fact that a big part of communication is listening. People just think it's talking and expressing yourself verbally and with your body language, but a big part of communication is listening. And so how important is listening in raising your emotional intelligence, would you say?
Oh, it's essential. It's, you know, and I come out of the theater where we say 90% of acting is listening, is listening to what the other person is giving you and then responding to it. I do an exercise with my emotional intelligence group on engaging in a difficult conversation. And particularly I find in American culture, and I've done this training with people in the UK as well, and they find this exercise a little bit easier. But particularly in America, we love to jump in straight in to try and solve a problem. When there's a problem, we want to fix it. We want to solve it right away. And that's not always the best way to approach a challenge that you're having within your team. And so I do an exercise that spent just articulating needs and getting information and asking questions. And if they start to try to solve the problem, then I stop them and I make them start all over again. Because if you try to jump right in and solve the problem immediately, you might be trying to solve the wrong problem. You may not know all of the information that you need in order to come up with the best solution. So we do an exercise that can be fairly painful sometimes in just learning how to ask questions and get information so that you know what the full picture is before you try to jump in to act. And it is particularly challenging sometimes for people to spend quality time listening to what someone's problems might be or what somebody's needs might be.
That almost sounds to me like how a scientist would go about it as well. Because a scientist doesn't jump in and go to the end of an experiment. That's not, they do step by step, and they make sure that they know what's coming. So they do it, yes, not necessarily with people, although they should, but that's the way they do it. They don't try to solve the problem before they go through each step, right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And so that would
I have a three-step process that I ask them to go through.
So what are the exact steps? You said you ask questions.
Yeah, the first step is to articulate needs is how we frame it.
Okay.
Making sure that your needs are heard, but that you understand what the other person's needs are, and that's where the asking questions comes into play. And then also understanding the needs of the situation. So in any kind of conflict that we have, I have my own needs that I need to have met. They have their own needs that they have to have met. And then there are very realistic needs of the situation. Usually the job has to get done. And I have my own needs that I have to make sure that my end of the job gets done. You have your own needs to make sure that your end of the job gets done. Mm-hmm. And just making sure that we have an awareness of a conversation around those needs. And then the second step is making sure that you've understood very clearly what the other person has articulated, making sure that they understand you. So it's, we do a lot of paraphrasing back in that phase of, so I've heard you articulate this. Is that correct? Am I understanding that correctly? Just checking in to make sure that everything's understood. And then the third and final step is actually solving the problem. And I had a pair in one of my emotional intelligence courses that worked together. She was a direct report to the manager that was in the team in the workshop with her. And they paired up together to try to go through this process. And they decided, against my advice, to try to resolve a problem that they were currently having in together. And it was very, fortunately, it was a very low stakes problem that they were having. They were about to redesign the floor plan of the office, and they had differing opinions on how that should be done. So since it was so low stakes, I let them role play it. And by being sitting there and forcing them to spend more time with the asking questions and articulating needs, they realized that they were both trying to solve a completely different problem. And as soon as they had that awareness, they immediately figured out a solution to the problem. The problem solving became then really easy because each of them had an awareness that the other was trying to solve for a different problem. And so that's why spending time really listening to each other and engaging in that part of the conversation can have a really helpful impact on arriving to the problem solving portion.
That's awesome. Now, how do you notice any difference in the genders in their emotional intelligence? Or how do women's EQs different from men's?
Yes and no is the answer to that question. A little bit more about my background. My PhD research is actually in looking at the history of women in theater history and in plays and dramatic literature. And I've since, because of that background, I've started to get asked by a lot of women's or leadership organizations to come and speak. At first, just on emotional intelligence, kind of geared toward the female executive, and then it started broadening out into a conversation with teams about gender in the workplace overall. And that's when I started to get those questions around, are women more emotionally intelligent than men? And when I first started doing the emotional intelligence training, we would look at how many women to men we had in the group that was coming in, and we would make sure that we would pair the women up with the men when we were doing partnering exercises because they have a different experience of emotional intelligence. And so since I started getting asked this question, I did some research on it. And yes, there are parts of women's brains are actually structured differently than men's, and we have a greater ability to retain information about emotional expressions and body language and tone and things like that. But there are a couple of really funny studies that were done where they asked groups.
Oh, let's hear them.
Where groups of people were asked to look at just pictures of people's faces and identify the emotion that was on the person's face. And in the group that was told that their emotional intelligence was being tested, the women did by far outperform the men in that group. But then when they were a different group of sets of people were told that their IQ was being tested instead of their emotional intelligence, the men performed just as well as the women did. So there was some questions there around the social stigma of it being labeled as emotional intelligence. So if men thought that there was their IQ was being tested or put on the line, then they were more motivated to perform better. And there have also been some studies that show that our emotional intelligence might actually be our direct relationship to power. That we are more motivated to be more aware of people's emotional states when we don't have power in a situation. So there was another study that was done where teams were put together with different gender makeups, and they found that when women were the leaders on the teams, they were less emotionally intelligent than the people that were directly reporting to them. So there's some new work that's being done around how emotional intelligence is directly related to power. And therefore, because women are oftentimes in positions where they don't have as much power, they are more motivated to be more emotionally intelligent. And also we're told that we are supposed to be emotionally intelligent. So therefore, it's a skill that we develop because we're told we should have it. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's true. It doesn't necessarily mean that all women are just better at gauging emotional states than men are. but there is science behind it to show that it's all about motivation and somewhat biological as well. Women do have an ability to register and to hold into our longer term memory people's emotional states.
Well, does that data apply across industries or positions or jobs? Like, is there any difference between engineers and healthcare workers, say, or is there any difference between introverts and extroverts or not?
Yeah, absolutely. I've noticed from my work with people in those various industries that there are, I think, that people who are more comfortable with emotional, with understanding and dealing with emotional states tend to go into professions like healthcare or human resources or something like that. And people who are more comfortable with objects tend to go into science and engineering and things like that. And so I've worked with a lot of scientists and engineers and people who have been more introverted in their lives, who have become so good at their job that they then get promoted to manager and now have to deal with people. I find that women are somewhat more emotionally intelligent in those groups, but they still, it's all about motivation and personality
and their power
and their power. Yeah.
Right. That makes sense. Well, I wanted to just insert a way in here because I know that people are probably fascinated by this topic. And what is the best way for our listeners to contact you, Rebecca? How do you like them to reach out to you?
Well, I have a website that I believe we will put a link to up on the page. It's RebeccaJohansson.com. There's a contact form in there if anybody's interested in getting in touch. And also there's a list of, I do a number of seminars at UC San Diego, Rady School of Business. If anybody's interested in those, I have a number of upcoming courses listed there, along with a discount code to attend on the website. And also I do travel all around the world and do this training. I mentioned I did a tour in the United Kingdom last year. Teaching emotional intelligence. I do a lot of work out of New York and San Francisco and all over the globe. So feel free to contact me if you have any questions about anything we've spoken about today.
That's wonderful. And just in case you're taking notes while you listen, her last name is spelled J-O-H-A-N-N, like Nancy, S-E-N, RebeccaJohansson.com. And I know that you're an avid traveler and hiker, too. We talked a little bit about that before. And you've actually hiked across Scotland, haven't you?
Yes, twice, actually. Yeah. I've hiked the Great Glen Way twice. The second time I thought I could do a three-day hike in 2 days, and my knees did not agree after the end of the 2 days.
So your body let you down.
Yeah, it made it finally, it definitely made me realize I'm not in my 20s anymore, but it's absolutely stunning. It's highly recommended. Scotland they have so many wonderful trails that take you through the country and then conveniently drop you down into a village for the night so you don't have to camp.
Do you happen to notice, this might be a ringer of a question, that when people travel and they're stressed and tired, that their EQ isn't quite as developed or high, or they've forgotten things?
Sometimes
the way they react is not the best.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, we need willpower in order to engage in our emotional intelligence. And when our willpower is depleted, when we're hungry, when we're tired, When all of those resources are depleted, then we tend to be very selfish because we need to replenish those stores before we can deal with other people's emotions or deal with managing our own emotions. So that's part of the awareness piece, is just recognizing when you are not in the space to be able to have control over your emotions, then you need to
back
take
off.
A break, take a walk, back off, get an out.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest today, Rebecca, and for being our leading lady. And a special thank you to all of our listeners, both in the U.S. and internationally. We are an international show. And we'll be back for another Women Lead Radio show Mondays at 9 a.m. and Fridays at 2 p.m. And it has been my sincere pleasure to be your host today. Until the next time, may you always communicate with purpose, poise, and power.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where life-focused, business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.